Say, kids, what time is it? Time for another episode of Brio TV, the podcast. I'm Bill Brio. Today's episode is brought to you by Crave, Hollywood Suite, Paramount Plus, and Super Channel. Express yourself. My guest today stars as Nora Finley Cullen, the extra cheeky DJ on the outrageous CBC series Moonshine, now also playing in the United States on the CW. Before that, you loved her on The Beaverton, Mr. D, and Air Farce, many other things. Listen, please welcome Emma Hunter. Emma, it's great to see you today.
What an intro. I can leave now. I feel fantastic. Thank you.
Well, you've very accomplished. I love everything you've done. You know, I was at a live taping of The Beaverton once and Air Farce. So I've seen you perform for television as part of an audience. And it's very fun to watch you on this crazy damn series, Moonshine. It looks like you're having a lot of fun.
I am. Enjoying it is an understatement. It's just an absolute pleasure. I'm obsessed with it, and I'm obsessed with the cast. It's been a gift.
Yeah, no, you guys, I watched the first couple episodes of season three, and the season starts now. We see your character, Nora, jumping right back into the role. You're sort of setting the tone for the series. You're basically having sex in a car.
That's exactly where, when I was a young actress in theater school and I thought, where do I want to be? It's having sex in a car quickly. Right. And my dream's been realized.
Mm-hmm. Was there a particular car that you dreamt about? Was that, you know?
Anything that was relatively clean, and that didn't come true. The car was dirty. So you can't win them all, but there you go.
You heard it here first, folks. It's a great scene. You're there, of course, with the police officer, James Gilbert, plays Terry the cop, right?
Yes.
Very funny. And my God, this character is such a cheeky, she's just full of mischief. You must love playing her.
I love playing her. And I think one of the big reasons is it's so different than my own life. You know, in my little world, I have three really small kids and I'm making lunches and wiping up various liquids, you know, pee and also juice and sometimes vomit. And so my life is very much mom, and Nora Finley Cullen lived the life of choosing the other path. So right. It's almost like I get to go to work and see what that life would have been like. And I'll tell you, it's not bad. Okay. Yeah. I love my kids, but it seems great out there too. I can feel the sun on my face, lack of responsibility. So yeah, to play somebody who's so unafraid of mistakes, of leaning into, you know, sexual relationships that could be damaging and conflict, fearless with conflict. It's, you know, I don't have that same approach to life, which sometimes I think I wish I had a little bit more of that. But to play somebody who's so just so brave with screwing it all up, crossing their fingers and jumping has just been incredible. Yeah.
Well, she fits right in with the rest of the family. They don't seem to any of them have any limits, really. It's very fun. And this is shot in Nova Scotia, right?
It is. Very much shot in Nova Scotia. Yeah. The actors sort of end up living the moonshine lifestyle a little bit. We all land in Nova Scotia end of June, early July, and then we shoot right until October, and we're right there. We all sort of live right beside the moonshine, and the only place to go out is the Shore Club, which is the Lobster Hall, so that's where we go. So it's sort of this like life imitating art thing that happens, and I just love that part of the country. Nova Scotia is the most beautiful place with the kindest people, and just to be by the sea, it changes the way you think. So I love those summers. Love the summers there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are amazing on the East Coast, and so very friendly. And is it Sherry Elwood is the producer creator? Is this lodge where you shoot, was this actually part of her family's lodge or something? Is that right? That's right.
You're bang on. Thank you very much. You've done your research. So the lodge itself that we shoot in is sort of a building built for camera, so we can move walls and run cable, and the taps don't work. So it was sort of built so that we could move it around for lighting and that. But Sherry's late mother's house, you could see it from where we would shoot. And so she, you know, back in the day, she since passed, but she would sort of watch us. She would sit there and she would be like, "Mom, I'm working." So it was like this bizarre. It was so weird. And sometimes Sherry, you know, Sherry has a house just outside of where we work, but we'd have one too many at the Shore Club and she'd go, "I'm just going to go sleep at my mom's."
Nice.
So yeah, it was, it's just, it's a gas. It's an absolute gas. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome that her mom got to watch her daughter work this show that she created just down the street, right? That is kind of beautiful.
Yeah, and tell, you know, a love story to the place where she was raised, I think.
Yeah.
Was really special for her. And I, but it's interesting, I think the community wasn't totally sure of us at the offset. Like, who are these, you know, Toronto, LA, Vancouver people coming in and telling our, like, how dare they? But I think once it was clear that Sherry, you know, was an authentic, not come from away, but come from directly there.
Yeah.
And they thought that the story was authentic and that the aesthetic was true. And I think they were really happy with it. At least guys at bars drunk told me they liked it. So that's always where you know where you land.
Would the bar be the shoe shop? Is that the one in Halifax? The
yes,
yeah.
The
shoe shop. Right. Yeah. No, that's a famous, that's where all the stars convene, right? Everybody from 22 Minutes.
All the stars and me.
And of course, from LA would be Jennifer Finnegan, I guess. But originally, I think, is she from Montreal? Where is
she's from Montreal. Yeah, yeah. Born and raised. And then, well, I guess sort of raised. And then she took off to Hollywood in her late teens and has just worked relentlessly on loads of things. She has a couple of Emmys and deservedly so. And then, and this project, her and Sherry are incredible together. And I think the role of Lydia really spoke to her and she just nails it. It's a really great piece for her.
It's fun watching season three. Lydia really is, she's just given up pretty much. She's decided she's not going to be type A anymore. And it's so fun to see you. There's the three of you, Anastasia Phillips as well, that play the sisters. You go to a club resort and you've got green mud on your faces. You're sitting in a hot tub. It's hilarious. It's really, really funny. That seems like it was extra fun to shoot, right?
It was, except the hot tub was not hot, Bill.
Oh.
So I did not love that. We were
I'm sorry.
But listen, this is actor crap. You can't complain. It was a sunny day in Nova Scotia, whatever. But yeah, we were like, could it be hotter? And they're like, no.
Oh, well. We'll be back with Moonshine's Emma Hunter in just a moment.
Actress Zoe Saldana is putting a pause on her Star Trek career and beaming down to Earth for the much-anticipated brand-new series from Taylor Sheridan entitled Special Ops Lioness. Based on real-life events, see Toronto native Laisla de Oliveira as she joins Nicole Kidman in this exciting spy-based thriller. From the training of recruits to the on-job assignments, the women of Lioness Special Ops are the real kings of the jungle in the war on domestic terrorism. All this and much more is yours. There's a mountain of entertainment on Paramount Plus.
Time once again to speak with Emily Gagné from Hollywood Suite. Emily, the summer's here and time is ripe for dancing in the streets. What do you got for us this month?
Well, it's going to be an action-packed summer, Bill, with our lineup of action films. Every single night in July and August, you can watch a different action film on Hollywood Suite. We've got everything from movies like Duel, which is Steven Spielberg's first film, to Death Wish, to Attack the Block, to Marathon Man, to Barbed Wire and John Wick. Every hero villain that you love from the action movie universe is probably on our channels this summer.
Wow. Well, there you have it. It's an action-packed summer on Hollywood Suite. Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, Bill.
Here she is again, Emma Hunter, So now I think this show was on in the States before on another service, but it's on the CW now.
CW is the first. So we had not been seen there until a week ago. So yeah. Okay.
And Brad Schwartz, the programming the head of the CW, he's bought a few Canadian shows, so it's great to see it there. But I'm watching thinking CBC has much more liberal guidelines in terms of programming content, I would think. Does the version that airs in the States must have to be altered slightly for that audience? Or it is, right?
Absolutely, yeah. The CW has a much more strict guideline. So, right. You know, the CBC is happy to have a swear word if it calls for it, whereas the CW is a no-no. So I think in terms of editing, you know, I'm not a part of that, but my understanding is that the decision was to keep the swear words, but bleep them as opposed to editing the scene. And I think there's a couple of places where they've maybe cut some things, like maybe my sex scene, which is too bad because it's very good, but I can see them kind of skipping over that just to set the tone. So fingers crossed the Americans get it and fall in love with Nova Scotia the same way we did, I hope.
Yeah, it's got this wonderful sense of community that's very eccentric. I'm thinking, like, I remember a show, there was a show Northern Exposure in the States several years ago, right? It's sort of like that kind of where a lot of people that are very divergent are thrown together in one spot, right?
Yeah, I agree. And it does have that. It's sort of the atmospheric part of the show. There was real care with creating that, you know, the long wire, the telephone or the dusty record player sitting in the back, the sort of orangey shag rugs everywhere. They really wanted to capture that nostalgia of going home. And even though, you know, the show is a contemporary show, but it does have that kind of time stopped and maybe around 78 and we all land there when we have a problem or need to fix something. So for sure.
The music helps set that tone. I'm loving Dark Side of the Road. Is it? There's April Wine.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Moonshine. Check it out now. Season 3 in Canada and season 1 in the United States. And I imagine they're just going to keep showing all 3 seasons there in a row, probably, or
I hope so. I think that would be the plan. Yeah, it's funny the way people consume television these days. I'm sure you're completely obsessed with this topic, but the binge versus the waiting to release. So yeah, it's a new day, that's for sure.
Yeah. So you shot this last fall, you were saying, right? Last summer, fall?
Yeah, summer into fall, yeah.
Okay. When you get these scripts, because they are pretty fun and outrageous, that scene in the beginning of season 3, you must just shake your head or laugh. Or what was your reaction when you read that?
It's sort of funny. It's like, I think I was a theater kid, so I've just got that mindset that perhaps not all actors have this, but I just get the script and I immediately go into like the how of it versus like, you know, there's this, are you comfortable? I'm like, what? Come, listen, this is the plan. So there was once though where the boys pulled my leg and they said, you know, have you read, because I had these 3 little kids running around. So I was often like the last to read the iteration of the script. We're on a thread. Have you read it? Have you read it? And so we were shooting that day and they said, have you read, you know, episode 304 or whatever? I said, no, no. And they go, oh yeah, you're completely naked on stage in front of a huge crowd and you're wasted and then you start throwing up. And I said, oh man, okay. All right, well, I guess I'll do some sit-ups. And I believe that. Like, I totally bought it. They did it for the whole day. It was Fareed and Tom, jerks. And then, you know, at the end, they're like, what? Do that? I was like, I mean, yeah, I guess.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I wish I could just do some sit-ups, you know. That would solve everything.
Like, that would do a damn thing. Anyway, you just start to plan. How's this going to go? Yeah.
It's a lot of fun to watch. I really love the show. How did you come to be part of the show originally? How were you cast?
Very classic style. I would love to tell you that Sherry Elwood saw my work and fell in love, but it was not. It was an audition, cold audition, followed by like a self-tape. It was original self-tape, and then a callback, and then a chemistry test, and then maybe another chemistry. Like, it was that really classic of going along the thing, and then finally getting the call, which was going to change my life. I mean, it really did. It was like, Nora is is pretty dramatic. And I came up through, you know, classical theater, but most of my career has been sort of the comedy bend. And so to get to play a character with real teeth was, you know, really, really exciting. I was just so happy. Yeah. And then I had to explain to my husband that we're all moving to Nova Scotia with the kids. It was going to be fine.
Well, not so bad. Worst places, right?
Totally.
And it's all, almost the perfect blend, isn't it? And it's very typically Canadian. You know, we're Canadian from interviewing people over the years, are actors, actresses who have had these range of experiences, dramatic, you guys, you know, to perform in Canada, to make a living, you do everything, stage and things. So even though me and others would have thought of you first as a comedian, especially after the Beaverton air farce and things, to have this shot doing something that was a dramedy, really, I guess, right?
Yes.
So it must have been a dream come true for you to stretch that way, right?
It really was. And I felt completely capable, but the person has to trust you. Like Sherry Elwood basically had to sign off on perhaps a riskier choice than some of the more sort of dramatically known actresses in Canada. So I sort of would have understood if she thought, I don't want, you know, this person, when people see her face on camera, they're immediately going to think comedy. And she just thought, no, you know, this is the person, and she's got the chops and she can do it. And that, to me, was like, oh, thank you for this gift. And then I felt, you know, and then I did feel a real responsibility to get it right, and to, when those more dramatic moments happen, to really do the work and to be, you know, fully dropped in without being too ooga booga, but to really nail it. And A, so that I get a second job after Moonshine, but B, to just, you know, service Sherry Elwood's vision. So as you can see from my sex scene in the car, I nailed it.
Yes, exactly. You did. Very convincing.
Commit.
do you look for the funny, though? I mean, you know, when it's there, right? You must
always. Yeah. And I think, you know, if there's a moment for a little bit, I'll always push it a little bit.
Yeah.
I just can't not do that. Yeah. You know, and I do think what's great about Moonshine and Sherry Elwood in general is that she puts the dark and the light right beside each other all the time. So you get this, which is so like life, you know, these harrowing things that happen and real tragedies need those moments of levity where somebody puts their hand in the honey or there's a trip, you know, it's like they go right beside each other all the time. And I think Sherry just takes that into the way she creates television. So it worked really well.
Is there any wiggle room to improvise?
There is, but you have to pick and choose. And I think we've all been in a scenario where they're like, can you just stick to the goddamn, please? Because we have to go into post-production and stop trying to make the crew laugh. And the problem is, I used to work on a show for years before Moonshine with the same crew. It was a show called Mr. D.
Mr. D.
So I know them all. Yeah. So they're all my buddies and I love them. And I'm, you know, Forbes, the Steadicam operator, who's a genius camera guy. You know, I love making them laugh, but they're, you know, it's not, they're like, this is not about Forbes, Emma. There's a whole larger thing happening here. So, yes. So my advice to anyone young would be choose wisely or they'll put the kibosh on it.
Right. Mr. D also shot in Halifax, right? I think.
Yeah.
Right?
So we're in the South Shore, but Mr. D was in Halifax, but a lot of the same crew.
Yeah. What an outstanding comedy ensemble on that series, right? I mean, you know, Jonathan Torrens and, oh my God, Mark Little, I think.
Mark Little, the maestro.
Yes, I mean, on and on. Some very, very funny episodes. Your character you played a teacher who was kind of trouble, right?
Unbalanced, yeah. Describe her as unbalanced.
Was that written in the notes right there?
It wasn't, but I was like, I feel like she's unhinged, and I can do it. I know unhinged. So.
Part of your resume.
Yes.
Now, yeah, that was fun. And the other thing about Moonshine, your character, a lot of the people are smoking all the time, right, on this series. You have to smoke those horrible veggie cigarettes?
Or yeah, they're horrible. They're the herbals. Right. So originally when we would be outside, because not to, but if I had to, I'd prefer the real ones.
Right.
But it's a huge mistake. I said, can I have a real one? And, you know, it's not very appropriate on set, but the, you know, one, okay. But on, you know, the seventh, you're going like, this was a bad idea. I should have stuck with the vegan things. So, but you get used to it, and outside, no problem. It was when it was in the Cove FM booth that was pretty stinky. I mean, it's right. I grew up in the 80s, so I used to go to, you know, like we would go to Swish LA and it was smoking or non. But right. to be inside now, it's a very, even with the veggies, even with the herbal cigarette smoke, it's just something that we don't experience anymore. It's not inside. So,
yeah.
But you get used to it.
I remember a few years ago talking down on the TCA, the television critics go down to LA and interview cast there. And it was when Mad Men was on the air. And, you know, show was set in the 60s and everybody was smoking like chimneys on that series all the time. And that was when I talked to them, and it was all herbal cigarettes. And I remember talking to a lot of the cast members who started smoking again. Because they hated these veggie cigarettes. They were craving a real one, right?
A real one. Totally. I could so relate.
Yeah, I guess so. That's funny. Well, good luck with the rest of that. Anyway, it's fun to watch. Let's talk a bit more about some of your other roles. The Beaverton, of course, you're playing an anchor, delivering the news. And that seemed to be a series that could have run longer, right? I mean, that was a great idea. What's the holdup, right? Why can't they get this?
Listen, you're preaching to the choir. That was one of the greatest gifts I think I've ever had. I loved watching real news stories unfold with this lens of how are we going to shape it and what's going to be our take on it. And we really did have this unique approach because Canada at the time didn't have, and still doesn't really, our bend on everything. So, you know, Colbert would do it, Jon Stewart would do it, Samantha Bee would do it. And then we could do the Canadian thing. So they would all be kind of competing in this U.S. perspective, but we could always be like, well, here's what we feel over here. It was a gift. I miss it every day. And I don't know who to blame. Trump? You usually blame Trump.
let's blame Trump. Sure.
Leave the Beaverton forever. It was the best. I miss it.
Yeah, it was fun. Of course, it grew out of a website, right? That did the news as well.
Yes.
What was fun too also was performing to an audience doing that show, right? Do you miss that? I mean, I know you've done stand-up, you've done audience stage work. Obviously, the Air Farce, do you get a kick out of performing to live audience?
I do. So I came up doing live theater. It's what I studied at school, and then it's what I did sort of professionally before the film and TV stuff really took off. And there's nothing like that sort of electricity between crowd and performer, good and bad.
Yeah.
And then the feeling, you know, after a show is done and that's it, it's poof in the ether. But it's been really nice to have a balance of it, to be able to have, I mean, Beaverton was really special because it was both worlds, and Air Farce was the same where, and 22 minutes too, where you would have that taped element coupled with a live element. So you have kind of the excitement of camera, but you're also not beholden to 25 takes because nobody's going to put the audience through that.
Right.
Beaverton was truly the perfect confluence of all of that. The live performance plus the element of camera, and then a product that exists once the show is over. So I miss it, but I do find most live things, for whatever reason, do happen at night. And I'm just in a phase in my life, if there's any young mothers out there,
right,
where it's really difficult to leave my house at 5 p.m. Whereas unless we were night shooting with Moonshine, you know, it would be a few days a week that I would be gone, but the hours were pretty often I was home at 5 o'clock and could, you know,
perfect.
My kids can explain to me how my job doesn't matter and how they're going to need more grape juice, etc. But the theater is a tough gig to do, I think, as a young parent. And same with comedy. Like, you know, comedy starts at 10 p.m. and
yeah,
at 10 p.m.
Right.
So I do think that that's a calling that I would love to come back to. But right now, things like, you know, Moonshine are fantastic fits just in terms of trying to manage everything.
More with Moonshine's Emma Hunter after this.
We'll be right back.
Are you craving some new shows to stream this summer? Let's look at a couple of highlights this month on Bell Media's one-stop streaming service, Crave. Bell recently signed a deal to keep HBO Originals on Crave for years to come. Among the new and returning offerings, set phasers to stun as Captain Christopher Pike returns in an all-new season of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Crave also has the original docuseries Billionaire Murderers, all about the investigation into the unsolved slayings in Toronto of Canadian power couple Barry and Honey Sherman. Finally, fire up a Crantini for the season 2 launch of And Just Like That, the reboot of the HBO signature series Sex and the City. Find out who's next when it comes to riding their Peloton to oblivion. All that and so much more, streaming exclusively in Canada this month on Crave.
Look, up at the set. It's a movie. It's a show. It's Super Channel. When calls the heart? This summer on Super Channel, that's when. Now, in its 10th season, catch up on this homegrown Canadian drama. It's heart and home time for all your favorites. And there's good news on Fuse. Can you keep some castle secrets? All will be revealed. Join us for a fascinating look into days of yore. We've lowered the drawbridge on 8 new episodes, all on Super Channel.
And we're back. Do you get some sort of special Canadian Screen Award for being on the Beaverton, Air Farce, and 22 Minutes? I think that's the trifecta, right? You don't see that.
Who do I talk to about this? You know what I get? I get to keep auditioning. And everyone's like, who the hell are you? Not see that? No, I didn't. It never ends.
This is why I bring this up here, is that hopefully someone from the Canadian Screen Guild or whatever.
Something. Even just a check. 60 sure. bucks. Come on.
60 bucks. Canadian? Even Canadian.
Put it in the mail.
What was the experience like working with like Don Ferguson and Lou Bagoy and Air Farce folks?
Oh my gosh, it was incredible. I mean, I'm a Sharon Lois and Bram kid, and Luba would always go into Sharon Lois and Bram and do the duck. And then all of a sudden you're at a table read with her and she's like asking if there's any more muffins. And I'm like, it's the duck lady. And Don is like the kindest, most giving, sweetest man that I just think he kind of like, in such a Canadian way, we're kind of like, hey, bud, great job. But he was just so paramount in this building of this entity that was Air Farce and then keeping it going and allowing kind of young people to come in and find their place in it. He was just a darling. Yeah, I can't say enough good things about him.
He's a real mentor, isn't he? And even
he is.
You know, he and Roger, I think, invested in the comedy bar and, you know, encouraged other young Canadians to get involved, right?
They did. And Gary Rideout, who owns Comedy Bar, is a very, very close friend of mine. And I think, he'll always feel indebted to those guys for doing that. And that place now is an institution. When like really great comedians come in, that's where they go.
Are you from Etobicoke originally?
I don't want to brag, but I'm from near the airport. Yes.
There you go. Well, I grew up in Etobicoke.
Hey!
Where did you go? Did you go to the School for the Arts down
there? I wanted to go to the School of the Arts so badly. No, so my parents are Brits. I'm first generation.
Right.
I went to private school because that's what you do. And I wore the uniform and all that. But I sort of begged to go to ESA. But joke's on them. I did it anyway.
I went to Michael Power High School down in the middle of Etobicoke as a youngster. Yeah.
A lot of my friends dated Michael Power guys. You guys are fun.
Oh, nice. Good to hear. This was a long time ago, Emma, but it was a cool school to belong to. And they had a good theater program. Jennifer Dale, you know, folks like that.
Yeah. There was theater there, wasn't there? Yeah.
But where was it that you learned that you had this talent to be a comedian, to be funny, to act?
I mean, jury's still out. I don't know.
No, it's not.
No, it's like It's this thing you sort of, I think some people have a plan for how their career is going to go. And I think I have always just been like crossing my fingers and hoping, like, it's almost like I just got on the ride and just, you know, hope I don't make too much of a fuss if people just let me keep going. So I remember being really frustrated when I was about 25 and I had been in Toronto from 21 to, and like really nothing had happened. Like I was auditioning and nothing. And I was like, I don't know what to do next. And that's when we started this. She said, "What we started a comedy troupe where it's just our girlfriends from Queens."
Wow.
And then that got a bunch of momentum. But then again, it sort of hit a ceiling, and I sort of thought, okay, I guess it's stand up. Like I really wasn't gunning to do stand up, but I was like, I just need to throw more shit at the wall because nothing's sticking. And then once that kind of comedy bend. Once I was brave enough to do that, it really got the ball rolling and more opportunities opened up. Hosting stuff like that, this whole hosting thing that is a thing kind of presented, yeah. itself, which I really enjoy as well. I love to write a script and stand at a podium and make people uncomfortable, you know, give a plaque or whatever. So it sort of just opened up a door. And I think that, you know, not being closed off to things that are terrifying. And even now, stand up to this day, like I find it really scary, but I'll do it because it's important. And it just, you know, and what's wonderful is I wound up years later, but I wound up on Moonshine doing a comedic, but also dramatic role. So okay. I landed sort of really where I'd hoped to land and have this great other skill now that exists. So, but I still, it's funny. I think if you come up in theater, I still always feel like I'm this close to being a waitress. And I was like, yep, okay, we got a gig. We're I'm just always like in, I have this mentality. Like I'll go to a restaurant, like, yeah, this place would be okay. I get served up. Yeah, it just doesn't, it never, I don't know when the thing will land or if that's wise, but it's still there, you know?
That's so hilarious.
Maybe it's the Canadian in me. I don't know.
Well, everybody I've talked to who've seen you, do the you know, you've done this performing at the Canadian Screen Awards a couple of times, right? And
I'm lucky. I don't know why they keep asking me back. Yeah,
no, they love you. Yeah,
great.
No, word back is always so great. So continued success with that. You know, are you working on anything else? I know you have three young children, so probably not, but is there other projects you're looking forward to doing?
I'm working on like some personal stuff, little, you know, writing a bit. I'm trying to flex that muscle. I don't know if I can do it, but I'm writing a bunch. And then I'm doing a couple of spots on shows. There's another CBC show that's coming out and I've got a little role on that I'm currently doing it's pretty great. It's
oh, great.
More in the comedic world, but I'm really enjoying it. So I'm not sure if I can, you know, how things are, but yeah. So a little bit of stuff for CBC and then some of my own writing stuff and yeah, I just keep maybe waitressing. I don't know.
Would this be for the coming 2023-24 season on CBC?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to more information on that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Who were your comedy heroes? Did you have growing up? Were there folks that you just loved and wanted to emulate their careers or?
I love these questions, Bill. Nobody asks me this stuff. No one cares. Thank you for these. Yes. So yes. My parents are Brits. And
right.
So all the stuff I grew up on was like Fawlty Towers, French and Saunders.
Wow.
What's it? Keeping Up Appearances. Like I grew up with this real kind of British bend on the way jokes are delivered and timing and even British physical comedy I find is different than American. And I think it's interesting if I had all that same experience but been in the US, I don't think it might have landed. But Canada has this innate kind of British timing thing that I think lended itself to my experience growing up. So yeah, I mean, Jennifer Saunders and Dawn French were hugely influential in so much of my life. I watched them all the time. But then I also Golden Girls. My Welsh grandmother was addicted to Golden Girls. We watched it every day. And those women, like that show holds up today. They are so funny and they're sort of unique archetype, their take on like the dumb one and the tardy one. They were these really original versions of these things. Bea Arthur, oh my God, forever.
Right. Anyway, yeah.
So yeah, all that stuff went in. And yeah.
Incredibly professional. Betty White, I mean, my God.
Oh my God.
Fantastic. How about Absolutely Fabulous? I'm sure it was something you watched. And
I mean, if you see Nora Saunders. Smoking, that's where I practiced.
How did you keep that ash going? It would be like, longer than the cigarette, right?
I know.
Joanne Lumley,
number five. I love them.
I think Fawlty Towers may be the greatest 12 episodes of anything ever made, right?
I mean, is there anything better than him losing his mind on Major, drinking his gin and orange juice or whatever it was, trying to keep it together with his hair going, and Manuel? I mean, the whole Prunella scale, like they were all just brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, Prunella was fantastic. And
he was fantastic.
Yeah. And did she co-write the series too, did she? Or was that the other actress?
It was a different time. I don't think a lot of the ladies had a lot of creative input.
But I think there's something to that. I don't think it was all. Yeah. No, I do. I could be wrong because Stan corrected, but it stands up, doesn't it? It's a hilariously funny show.
It does. Absolutely, it does. Yeah.
What is okay? Well, let's get into. Very generous with your time. Thank you so much. I want to ask.
Are you kidding? I love this.
All right. Well, let's talk a little longer. I want to. Did you? Well, when you were starting up, did you some stand up? Did you go up on Yuck Yucks? Where did you first venture?
Yeah.
Into
so
that?
I started at. It was before Yuck Yucks. It was like easier to get up at the Riv. So I used to play the backspace at the Riv a bunch. The Rivoli.
Yeah.
And then I would do like the sort of Yucks is interesting. You play like, I think the Tuesday nights was the less kind of prestigious night. And it's often going up with 19-year-old guys from Humber where that type of comedy, which is much more kind of, let's say carnal was slightly different than my like posh, upper class witticisms. I would like, they were just like, get this woman out of our scene. But then, the right people see you and you keep it moving. And then instead of being on Tuesday nights, I could be on maybe a Thursday, which was a better lineup. And then Comedy Bar. And then I was able to do Just for Laughs, which was insane. And
wow.
And that type of thing. Yeah. Which was exceptional. So yeah, it's like anything. It just sort of, it built up, but you have to go, you have to be out there being uncomfortable or to some it comes perhaps a bit more naturally, but you just have to be out there all the time. Like I was doing it 2-3 nights a week.
Wow. And what were you doing? Did you do impressions? Did you have?
I did impressions. I was always too afraid to just direct address, tell my story kind of thing or even like anecdotes. But then later, I think I did the Winnipeg Comedy Festival and it was like that thing where it's like, we're not looking for impressions. You got to do it. And I said, oh God, here we go. But the second you do it, I can do this. I can totally do this, and it was a great experience and I loved it. So that muscle then got flexed. But I sometimes need to be pushed a little bit into these moments, but now they've all happened and I'm, getting confidently into my late 30s. So I do feel like there's the skill set that took a bit of time to get, but I've got it now. And
speaking of being pushed a bit, you did impressions. Can you conjure one up for us? Who would you do an impression of?
Oh my God. I haven't done impressions in a very long time. I'm trying to think. Oh, you put me on the spot. Who's something? I can't think of one.
Okay. All right.
Like, is there someone that you love?
No, I just wondered who you were doing. I mean, would it be a politician or someone on television or?
It's just, I mean, I've just been so deep in moonshine. I mean,
Well, don't worry. That's all right. Okay. We're asking you to dig into the trunk.
I could do an impression. I could do an impression of a Newfoundlander.
Oh, okay. I'll tell
you the story. I'll do it really quickly. There's a woman named Shauna who obviously doesn't speak anything like me, but she ran transport and she's from Newfoundland. And she said, she said, I had cramps one day, feminine cramps. And I said, like, I think I'm going to die. This is really bad. She said, I'll tell you what, have you ever given birth to a baby? I said, no, I have not. She says, well, I'll tell you what, my son Kenneth was born. I looked down at him. I said, this is so sad for this poor baby because I'm dead. I thought I died. So whatever you're going through, it was worse for me. I hope you don't have a baby because you feel like you're going to die.
Wow, that's hilarious. I think you got to work that into the show. That's pretty funny. Do you do shtick for your kids? Do they have a funny mom?
They do not think they have a funny mom, but I do run a little bit of interference with joke telling in that you can say it once. If you want to finesse it twice, there's not a third time because you've blown the punchline now. So knock, knock, who's there? Banana. That's okay. We know this one. Let's keep it moving. And I have scripted them each, one joke each for their arsenal. So if somebody says, do you have a joke? They don't do what I just did. Just go, I used to have an impression. They're ready to rock. So
let's hear a kid joke.
Okay. Why was 6 afraid of 7?
Oh, I was 6 afraid of 7. I don't know. Why was 6 afraid of 7?
Because 7, 8, 9.
Oh,
see, we're ready to go. King of the school. No problems.
There you go. Well, those are handy. Kids love jokes. Yeah. It seems incredible to me. I remember having your first child. It seems like yesterday. I can't believe you have 3. So congratulations. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's the word for it, Bill. There's too many of them. It's your kind, but I don't know what happened here. It was a
No, that's awesome. What do they say? If you have 2 children, it's man to man and 3 is zone defense, right?
I don't know what they say, but it's intense over here. I'll tell you what.
Well, have fun. Okay. Now let's wrap this up. I got 3 questions for you. What are you watching now? What TV shows? What are you streaming? What are you
binging? I love this question. We just finished Succession, which I was obsessed with. I'm obsessed with it. Yeah. It was brilliant. And then Queer Ultimatum.
Ultimatum?
Queer Ultimatum. Have you heard of this show?
No, I haven't.
So I feel like Succession is slightly more highbrow. I have a high-low art style. So Succession is the more cerebral takeovers, Shakespearean, the classical music. And then Queer Ultimatum is a bunch of lesbians trying not to cheat on each other. And they either have to get married or break up at the end. And they just fight. And I'm here for it.
Is this a reality show?
It's a reality show.
Where do you watch it? Where do you see this?
Watch it on my computer eating chicken over the sink when my kids go to sleep.
Okay.
If you want to know.
That's a very specific answer. Okay. What about when you were growing up? Was there a TV show that you loved to watch as a child?
Yeah, I would say Golden Girls, for sure. I think I've seen every episode 5 times. And then I used to love Who's the Boss?
Ah, really? Tony Danza. Light.
Yeah, and Tony Danza, which I think it wasn't a good show, but I don't know. There's something about it. I liked Alyssa Milano.
Yeah.
And the sort of dirty grandmother, Mona. Yeah.
She was great. Yeah. During COVID here, we went back and watched every episode of Frasier, right? Because you could binge 4 or 5 episodes a night during COVID, right?
So I remember Frasier being exceptional. Does it stand up?
Oh, it's better. It's incredible. Those 2, Niles and Frasier, they're just Laurel and Hardy. Like, they're incredible. And
that was such a good show.
Yeah, I don't really find a bad episode. Now, finally, here's the biggie. What is your all-time favorite TV theme song?
Thank you for being my friend.
There we go.
Travel down the road and back again. With the plane landing.
Yes.
I love that song.
Bonus points for giving us a little sample of it, of course. That was the Golden Girls theme song and great, great song. Listen, Emma, thank you so much for all your time. Continued success at home and at work. I hope many more seasons of Moonshine, which of course is on CBC, 3rd season, and the CW. Exciting. Everybody in the States gets to see it. So fun for them. So thank you very, very much today, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Well, thank you as always for your thoughtful and kind questions. I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to talk to you every time. It really is.
Very sweet of you, Emma. Thank you. Lovely to talk to you too. All right. Have a great day.
You too, love. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
The theme to the Golden Girls, Thank You for Being a Friend, has traveled down the road and back again. It was written and released as a soft rock single by Andrew Gold back in 1978, reaching number 25 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 chart. A cover by jingle singer Cynthia Fee was recorded for the Golden Girls when that series premiered in 1985. It has since been played on everything from World Series games to The Simpsons, and even in a metal rock version on Saturday Night Live. Thanks as always to producer Phil Hong for all the care and flourish he brings to each one of these episodes. I'd also like to thank all of the amazing publicists who arrange for guests to share their stories here at Brio.tv. Thanks also to our sponsors whose contributions make these podcasts possible. Finally, thanks to you, listener, for finding time to share in these conversations with the people who make the television we love. Please favor us with a like or a comment, or if you're feeling especially ambitious, a review. I'm Bill Brio. Thanks for listening.